It's been interesting to hear you, particularly as it relates to these two cases, really get into sort of the art of oncology and how you sort of shade the way you approach things. For practical purposes right now, how are you approaching the use of genomic assays in people with node-positive disease? Are you just using recurrence score? Do you use another assay? How many nodes are you comfortable getting a recurrence score on or a genomic assay on?
Right now, I guess I can't recall having a genomic assay on patients with more than three positive nodes. I think there the decision can be made without that, because if you're not giving chemotherapy, you're having somebody who has comorbidity where you're really worrying about the value of it at all, or they really are just not wanting it. So it gets into what we were talking about, you know, where will it make a difference? So it's something that I primarily will do with my grade one, grade two tumors who have one, maybe two lymph nodes. I can't remember one with three, but I probably, you know, would still think about it in that situation.
What data do we have? Of course, we have the randomized trial cooking out there, the PONDER study. But what data do we already have, you know, retrospective, et cetera, looking at genomic assays in the node-positive situation?
The one prospective data set that led to getting the mamma print on NCCN guidelines and so forth was the MINDAC study, where they did include node-positive patients as high-risk, patients one to three nodes. I mean, it is important to, you know, acknowledge it started out as a node-negative study. The patients with node-positive were added later, and they never really break out that high-risk group that I've been able to find, you know, in terms of forest plotting the node-positives from the node-negatives. But there's really no reason to believe that there would be a big difference. But they did show that in patients who had the high clinical risk, which would have included the node-positive patients, higher-grade tumors, who had a low score, they did quite well at 5 years. Their five-year distant recurrence-free interval was about 95%. And so it met their criteria for saying that's enough to feel comfortable omitting chemotherapy in these patients, and it was approved on that basis. We don't have that type of data yet with TAILORx because the decision was made to study the Oncotype score in responder similar to what was done in TAILORx, though the recurrence score ranges were changed appropriately. But there has been a substantial uptake of the Oncotype, even in node-positive patients, sufficient that the company was able to work with the SEER database, looking at how patients did according to their recurrence score, you know, out to 5 years with positive nodes. And that data set was on the old range, you know, before the shift. But it's all consistent with the fact that the low recurrence score patients do well with endocrine therapy alone with one to three positive nodes. You know, you didn't have the real clean data. All you knew is that the lower recurrence scores with one to three positive nodes, the majority of the docs didn't give chemo. And those patients did well. A small percentage did. So it's not clean data, but it's supportive data. So I, you know, for me again, because I value the Oncotype DX recurrence score so much for managing my endocrine therapy, that's the assay that I prefer, even with the node positive patients, recognizing that we don't yet have the randomized data, that I am relying on retrospective data from SEER. There was also data from large study providers, health insurance coverage in Israel that, you know, same sort of thing, where Israel standardized their use of Oncotype very, very quickly, so they were able to publish some retrospective data as well. It's all consistent.